Views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Good afternoon, good evening, whatever time zone you might be in. This is Dark Matter Radio with your host, Ronnie McLean. Let today be a marker because I'm going to say happy 4th of July to you, for all of those that can actually participate in this event and feel proud about it. One of the things that we need to get out of the way right away is one of the main people in this event is George Washington. Do you know he had a nickname called Town Destroyer? Conactus Cruas, Town Destroyer, was a nickname given to George Washington by the Iroquois Native Americans in 1753. The original, in its original language, it's been given a variety of different pronunciations, but it was given to his father first because of the propensity as how his father was running around destroying towns up and down the Potomac River and redoing the settlements there for those Europeans that were coming into this country. One of the things that we have to also look at George Washington is that he had a pretty much same type of view as the rest of the Americans at that particular time, a little bit more softened, maybe because of some of the things that he had seen. But George Washington is also often revered as the first president of the United States. As the first president, he established many of the protocols for the office. From an Indian's perspective, and in this case, an indigenous Indian, melanated Indian perspective, his presidency also established much of the basis for the federal indigenous policies. Like other non-indigenous of his area, he viewed Indians and indigenous people as vanishing people. Get that? George Washington viewed the indigenous people as vanishing people, or at least people who at some time in the near future, that's in his near future, would cease to exist in the United States, and that corporation that they just formed. Indians were either going to die out, migrate out, or become totally assimilated into the culture upon which is almost happening today. The relationships that we have are affected by the relationships that we have lost, given up, or ended in some fashion. No one enters a relationship expecting a fallout of love. No one expects to have their emotions stuck in a place where they are being made to halt, be dissolved, or delayed. No one wants to feel the pain and linger long after any type of relationship is over. It can be challenging to let go when the heart aches for its soul connection. It's best to get over and beyond the painful hurt and the emotion of the ache before it becomes too much to withstand. A broken heart heals only when the mind becomes free. However, one must understand that when soul ties, spirit threads, and other ties of the heart are formed, they may not be formed under just the premise of love-based relationships. It's extremely important. It is there that we begin to understand the power of these types of ties and why breaking them is so important. These ties can be found prolonged death grip on your life and change the path of your very existence if they go unchecked. That is from the a book that I wrote called Soul Ties, One Step at a Time. It's time to love yourself. It's time for peace. It's time to break free. And this is what the indigenous American, the melanated indigenous American, is going to have to begin to start understanding. Because, as I would say, the death of the African American is imminent one way or the other. It's going to be important for you to understand that at some point, the African American, as George Washington said, is no longer going to exist. Before we get into things, we're going to be talking about 40 reasons why the American jail system is filled with melanated people and poor folk. And we're also going to be talking a little bit about the how the jail system is populated by a system of capitalism. It's important that we understand that this is a business, people. It's a business when they throw somebody in jail. It's a business when they do these criminal studies. It's a business because they calculate how many people, how many melanated people are born, how many people are born, period. And then at the age of 3, they calculate 10 years, 13 years, 20 years, and they can figure out a percentage of how many of those people are going to end up in their system. And it's pretty disgusting, but that's just the facts of what it is. Let's get to a little bit of news, and there's a few things that I wanted to really bring up today. And a lot of times you have to understand the reason why I do go through the news is to give you an understanding of what's going on in your world that you may not be privy to, or you might be privy to, but also have an understanding that you may not be able to do anything about it because you're a part of a system that doesn't want you to have anything to do about it. A week ago, we heard about the EU and how they were going to be breaking up and how Britain, England, voted themselves out of it. And then I went into it and I said that there's probably something else going on as well, because then it came out that they wanted to form a super state, and those five other states that were in there that were supposed to be coming out of it ultimately wasn't. So now the headline from the Express, home of the Daily News Express, Sunday Express: EU once an empire, Brussels hopes to expand its influence as far as Asia and Africa. The EU wants to expand its influence as far wide as Asia and Africa, which critics fuming shows Brussels are planning to form its own empire. This is getting NATO nations a little uneasy, because the EU is going to be slowly gathering its people and bringing them into one fold of a super empire, where they said that they want to be able to act as individual and be able to defend themselves at will. The EU wants its own empire, as a former commissioner, President José Manuel Barroso, made it clear when he was in charge. This global strategy by the EU is yet another reason why last Thursday the results was a, here it says lucky, I'm going to say knowingly, what was going on, escape for the United Kingdom. We talked about CERN just a little bit. We're going to have a total program on CERN probably in about a month's time. CERN is extremely important for you to understand because they're doing a lot of interesting things over there. And most people who have been following it have an understanding that they're actually opening up portals to other dimensions, and they're actually seeing beings inside these portals that they're opening up at CERN. And you say, what is CERN? CERN, as I explained, I believe in the first show, the Hadron Collider. So now, I mean, anything that goes on over there, people get nervous. So now a newspaper is reporting photos of strange clouds over CERN causing concern that CERN is up to something unusual. Anything unusual that happens or rumored or is rumored to have happened at around or in the general vicinity of Geneva, Switzerland, is often blamed on the Large Hadron Collider and its maker, CERN. That was the case once again this week when photos of a video appeared on the internet allegedly showing strange clouds over the Hadron Collider. Has a portal to another dimension been opened, or is this just a case of panic in perception? The video is simultaneously titled, What Portal Did CERN Open Now? Strange clouds have hovered above the Hadron Collider and was produced and uploaded by a Freeman Time Fighter. So CERN is something that we all are going to have to really be watching on, especially if you're paying attention to all of the end time events. This is one of the events where they think that they, or they believe that they're trying to bring the Antichrist through or something through from another dimension. Some of the pictures that I've seen of CERN are quite ominous. They show actually star clusters of a galaxy that has not been charted in our system. And what they're saying is that it's actually in another universe or dimension of time. Mystery trees, bent trees. These mystery bent trees that's been all across the Native American Southwest and East. Expert claims the trunks that veer into the right angle found dotted around the U.S. are secret indigenous American trail markers. So the trees, as you look at them in the news article, are actually severely bent. They're about, I would say, three feet around. So it's a huge tree, and somehow they have them angled so that they look like they're question marks. And it's very interesting because they're all over the place, and it doesn't look like it's a natural formation at all. If you get a chance, check out this article and check out the pictures. This one is from Mail Online, and the headline is Mystery of the Bent Trees. I got another thing that might be very, very, very interesting to all of you, but it should. And this gets into the aspect of the UFO. And I want to be able to begin to start explaining it from another perspective that we normally don't hear. We usually hear it from the European perspective. But in the European perspective, they don't really tell everything. There is an interview that happened with a NASA official who was extremely high. He has a clearance level. I think it's five levels higher than the presidency of the United States. And his name is Norman Berggren. And in the interview, he starts explaining how there's these ships around the rings of Saturn, these huge ships. Now, I mentioned Saturn one time before, and Saturn has the hexagon. And some of the scientists are trying to say it's a normal phenomenon, but it's almost an impossibility for it to be some sort of a normal phenomenon because hexagon, at the rate that has formed over there on Saturn, and it's been continuous, perfect hexagon, it's swirling around very fast with clouds. So they have seen huge ships fixing the rings of Saturn. And Norman Berggren, as he's being interviewed, the lady's asking him whether or not if he's ever seen any of these beings in these ships. And he starts to stutter, and he starts to get really nervous. His hand starts to, you know, go all over the place. He's trying to get it out, but he doesn't want to say it. But he says, she says, "So what did you see?" And he says, I seen black people get off the ship. And she goes, oh, do you mean like, you know, like brown aliens, you know, with, you know, the blonde hair? He said, no, you don't understand. These were black, really black people getting off the ship. Well, then she was trying to make it out as though they were a mantis race or something like that. But he was distinct and he was very clear that they were black, very tall, black, melanated, strongly melanated beings getting off the ship. And so we need to understand that there are a whole lot of things that are going on around us. And it's extremely important that we have an understanding of what's going on around us in terms of what they are seeing out there, because the Hubble Space Telescope has, and I don't know if anybody's ever seen this, but the Hubble Space Telescope was taking some pictures of a very, very, very distant galaxy. Now, this galaxy or clusters of stars that was forming in a region, they call it a small Magellanic Cloud, right? It's approximately 196,000 light years away from Earth, 61 kiloparsecs. Right, so this image, when you look at this image, it's strikingly familiar of a black man. And this picture is a picture of a stellar constellation, of a stellar cloud, the Magellan Cloud, as they call it, a Magellanic type cloud, 196,000 light years away. And this Magellanic type cloud has a clear face of what we would call negroid-type lips, negroid-type noses, a forehead, and the color is of a very dark melanated person with, I would say, curly hair. As I'm looking at it right now, it is amazing. And the picture is so clear. I've seen a lot of pictures of space. This picture is so clear that it would just knock your socks off. And it's hard for you to find it because NASA has taken most of the pictures of this one off. And the orientation of this picture is called NGC 602. And it's, let me give you the size, just to give you an understanding of what this picture in space looks like. The size of it is 180 light years or 55 parsecs wide. And the image is a composite of many separate exposures made by the ACS instrument on the Hubble Space Telescope using several different filters. Two filters were used to sample broad wavelength ranges. One filter was used as a simple narrow wavelength emission. The color results from assigning different hues, colors to each monolithic or monochromatic image. In this case, the assigned colors are blue, green, and red. And the picture that's resulting from this is stunning. You have to see that. So if you ever get, when you get on there, get on there, this put in Hubble finds picture of a black man in space. And you should be able to get this up because there are a few YouTube videos that are capturing this. And it's I have to say, I'm still right now shocked and amazed as to how the clarity of this. Other news is all the basic stuff. The ISIS people are running around blowing up Bangladesh, blowing up Turkey. They're causing more threats, that the more incidents are going to be happening on this side of the continent, in the continent in U.S. and in Canada. And these guys are very active, very, very active. So there's a lot of things that are happening on this earth that we need to pay attention to, because we as a species, as a people, don't have much time. And what we're going to have to do to be able to save ourselves cannot happen in another generation or two. It's going to have to happen within this generation. And it's important because a lot of the history that we know more about the Eastern history, the history of Europe, Africa, and the Middle East, which actually is part of Africa, but they changed that all around. But we know more about those histories than we know about the history here on this side of the continental Americas. Such as, I don't know if anybody's ever heard of the Black Native American Wars and the Yosemite tribe, along with the Yuki tribe. We talked about that the other day. But contrary to popular belief, I'm going to read something that Reed Scotty. Scotty Reed had sent out just a little while ago. Contrary to popular belief, African-American history did not start with slavery in the New World. An overwhelming body of new evidence is emerging which proves that the Africans had frequently sailed across the Atlantic to the Americas thousands of years before Columbus, and indeed before Christ, before the birth of Christ. The great ancient civilizations of Egypt and West Africa traveled to the Americas, contributing immensely to early American civilization and importing the art of the pyramid buildings, political systems, and religious practices, as well as mathematics, writing, and sophisticated calendars. The strong evidence of the African presence in America before Columbus comes from the pen of Columbus himself. In 1920, a renowned American historian and linguist, Leo Wiener of Harvard University, in his book Africa and the Discovery of America, explained how Columbus noted in his journals that the Native Americans had confirmed that very melanated skinned people, had come from the southeast in boats trading in gold-tipped spears. One of the first documents instanced of the Africans sailing and settling in the Americas were Black Egyptians, led by King Ramses III during the 19th dynasty in 1292 BC, before Christ. In fact, in 445 BC, the Greek historian Herodotus wrote of the ancient Egyptian pharaohs' great seafaring and navigational skills. Further concrete evidence noted by the Dr. Imhotep and largely ignored by Eurocentric archaeologists includes Egyptian artifacts found in North America from the Alleghenian writings on the East Coast to the artifacts of Egyptian places names in the Grand Canyon. And that's a whole other thing about the Grand Canyon and a lot of these artifacts. In 1311 AD, another major wave of African exploration to the New World was led by King Alcabar II, the ruler of the 14th century Mali Empire, which was larger than the Holy Roman Empire. The king set out 200 ships of men, 200 ships of trade, material, carps, animals, clothes, and critically African knowledge of astronomy, religion, and the arts. African explorers across the vast Atlantic waters in primitive boats may seem unlikely or perhaps far-fetched, and some such incredible nautical achievements are not as daunting as they may seem, given that numerous successful modern attempts have illustrated that without an oar, rudder, or sail, ancient African boats, including the dugout, would certainly have been able to cross the vast oceans in a matter of weeks. Very, very interesting stuff that we have here. So when you begin to start talking about Native American, Indigenous American, melanated history, we have to understand that it just didn't start with the words of Columbus coming over here, seeing a few people. The history is long and vast, as we had described in the rulership of Europe and of Spain, which is part of Europe, and how the Moors and how the Hebrews, the dark-skinned people, came over here and they were doing their trade as well. So this has been going on for thousands of years. And as the archaeology record has produced, we have been here, or melanated people, dark-skinned people, have been here for over 50,000 years. So when you begin to start looking at what's going on today, you begin to start having an understanding of what's been happening to our people and why our people are being treated the way that they're being treated. It's not without coincidence, like I was telling you about the Native American Black Wars, the Black Native American Wars, the Yamasee tribe and the Yuki tribe. Again, we're talking about here, these tribes mainly in the Florida region, Georgia. They were chased all the way up into North Carolina, but they kind of ruled that whole entire area. And it was a war. It was actually one of the first wars that they had against the white Europeans as they were coming over here. Well, it wasn't the first wars because you had the Aztecs that fought against the conquistadors. And the only reason why the Aztecs had lost that one was because their confederation also broke apart and the Mongol Indians sided with the Spanish and created a devastation for the black rulership there. The same thing happened up here with the Yosemite tribe. The Mongols, portion of the Cherokee Nation, they were part of the Musqueam Confederation, and there are about six or seven different types of nations that were involved in this war. And the Indians, they separated and broke apart. The Cherokees broke apart and sided with the British. Turning point in the war. And if they didn't side with the British, we would be living a totally different life today. And there are a lot of things, and that's the reason why I read you the things about the soul ties. There are a lot of things that we tend to get ourselves attached to that that tend to break our heart, and we don't want to let go of them. And but as we begin the process of healing, and as we begin the process of bringing our people back to where they should be, and giving ourselves a semblance of some sort of life here on this part of the earth, we have to begin to start breaking these soul ties. And we have to begin to start looking at things the way that they are. There are a lot of things that have been done that's wrong, but we can't have a hateful heart because that's not who we are as a people. But we have to have a reasonable heart and a reasonable mind of being able to move forward and moving out of the doldrums of the communities that we're in. We find ourselves in a very bad situation when it comes to the shocking facts about our justice system. And as we begin to start talking about treaties that has happened at Native Americans, and if you looked at, there was a posting that I put up about how the landmass from the 1700s, early 1700s, to the late 1800s into the 1900s, how the landmass was slowly taking away from the indigenous people of this country. And, you know, hazing is a very big part of formulating a heavy soul tie, because the more somebody is hazed, the more they have to justify themselves as to why they're being hazed, and the more difficult it is for them to get out of the relationship, because if they're hazed for quite a long period of time, when they begin to start turning away from it, they have to have a very strong constitution because they have to justify to themselves why they allowed that hazing to go on for so long. So, and this is where we're at now. We are in the process of destroying a lot of things, cutting out a lot of things, breaking a lot of these soul ties to get ourselves out of the mentality that it's going to be okay. Because it's not. As I read to you earlier, 250 years ago, George Washington thought we were going to be extinct. And they've been trying to get us extinct for quite some time, and they're very, very, very close to it. And a way that they're doing it now is through the prison system. And what I want to do is get into this justice situation, because the shocking facts about our American prison system, a for-profit industry, is just overwhelmingly. When I was in college, I did do a report on that, and I'm going to get into that a little bit more right after this break.
You're listening to Dark Matter Radio with your host, Ronnie McLean, on Black Talk Radio. To reach Dark Matter and to talk to Ronnie, log on to Black Talk Radio. Look up Dark Matter, click on the icon. You can reach Ronnie through Skype or through the telephone number that is provided. Dark Matter Radio with Ronnie McLean.
Great day it is to be alive. What a great day it is to be alive. We are now going to get a little bit more in detail about this prison system that we're involved in. As long as there's been human societies, there's been criminals, despite the best efforts of lawmakers and religious institutions. Humans can't be trusted to some degree to do the right thing. And even when we're aware of the consequences, the prison system is used to be a last resort, a place you send people when other forms of punishment were not effective. Now it's grown into something much larger, much darker, and even less rehabilitative. Unbeknownst to many, the prison system has become a for-profit business, in which inmates are a product of a system that has shocked similarities to other human-based businesses formed in the American, such as slavery. Remember, the United States is a corporation. It's a business itself. In late 2013, a new report from In the Public Interest, ITPI, revealed that private prison companies are striking deals with states to contain and that contain clauses guaranteeing high prison occupancy rates, sometimes 100%. This means that the states agree to supply prison corporations with a steady flow of residents, whether or not the level of criminal activity exists. Now, understand this: over the past 20 years, especially since when Louis Farrakhan had that Million Man March, remember that. The crime rate has been dropping substantially. So just keep that in mind. Some experts believe this relationship between government and private prison corporations encourages law enforcement agencies to use underhanded tactics, often targeting minorities and unserved groups to fill the cells, mainly indigenous people. The report, Criminal: How Lockup Quotas and Low Crime Texas Taxes Guarantee Profits for Private Prison Corporation, documents and contracts exchanged between private prison companies and state and local governments that their guaranteed prison occupancy rates, essentially creating inmate lockup quotas, or force taxpayers to pay for empty beds if the prison population decreases due to lower crime rates or other factors, essentially creating low crime taxes. As a result, there are now over 2 million people living behind bars in the United States. That's a half million more than China. China has a population 5 times greater than the U.S. Many more incarcerated for non-violent crimes, like the use of possession of marijuana and other problems that would be far better served through rehabilitation and educational programs. Remember that war on crime began back in the 1980s. It may have gone even way back as far back as into the 70s. The worst part that is once captured by the prison industry, inmates are forced to work for pennies. Now get this. An hour, for pennies on the hour, providing cheap labor for some of the most profitable enterprises in the world, including the U.S. military. Their U.S. military that indigenous people are putting their money into was help supporting this institution. According to Left Business Observer, the federal prison system industry produces 100% of all military helmets, ammunition, belts, bulletproof vest, ID tags, shirts, pants, tents, bags, and canteens, along with war supplies. Prison workers supply 98% of the entire market for equipment assembly services, 93% of the paints to make paints and paintbrushes, 92% of stoves assembly, 46% of body armor, 36% of home appliances, 30% of headphones, microphones, speakers, and 21% of office furniture, airplane parts, medical supplies, and much more. Prisoners are even rising seeing eye dogs for blind people. This kind of reminds you of how they got the indigenous people to work the farms, run their farm businesses, and do all their paperwork for them while they sat behind the while they sat at their plantation and watched everybody else do the work. So when you get this kind of labor for less than a dollar a day, it's hard to see governments motivated for incarcerating fewer people, and it's all done at taxpayer expense. Just give you some statistics in terms of what's happening here. Between 1990 and 2010, the number of privately operated prisons in the United States has increased 1,600%. Private prisons being in roughly $3 billion, they bring in roughly $3 billion in revenue every year. Two of the biggest private prison companies in the country, Correction Corporation of America and the GEO Groups, made $3.3 billion in annual revenue in 2002 alone, making up 75% of the private prison industry. And this is another one I have to get into. In contracts with the government, some private prison companies demand minimum occupancy of levels of 90%. And some of the people that are actually farming out to these prisons are Boeing, Victoria's Secrets, McDonald's, and get this, Starbucks. Prison work and apparel, document conversations, call centers, printing, and even clean energy. Wow. Even the environmentalists is getting along with this. A single prisoner's labor is worth between 93 cents to $4 per day. The last thing I want to bring on this subject is the price per prisoner now averages an annual cost of expenses for a prisoner in New York City is $168,000. $60,000 of that dollars comes from taxpayers. In 2010, the national average was $28,000 per prisoner. So it's very interesting on what's going on with our prisons, what's going on with our young males, what's going on with our females, what's happening to our indigenous population as a whole. It's no different from what they did to us throughout history as another means of being able to take a large percentage of our population out of the working population. Although the quote-unquote African-American doesn't really produce anything. They don't own any corporations. But we'll get into why they created the African-American in a couple of shows from now. The U.S. Department of Justice, they report that there are actually 2.2 million people in our nation's jails and prisons, and another 4.5 million people are on probation or parole in the U.S., totaling 6.8 million people, one out of every 35 adults. We are far away the leader of the world in putting our own people in jail. Most of the people inside are poor, indigenous people. So let me get into the 40 reasons why our jails are full of indigenous, melanated people, poor people. The first one is, it's not just about crime. Our jail prisons have grown from holding about 500,000 in the 1980s to 2.2 million today. The fact is that crime rates have risen and fallen independently of our growing incarceration rates. Two, police discriminate. The first step in putting people in jail starts with incarcerations between police departments and people. From the very beginning, indigenous and poor people are targeted by the police. Police departments have engaged in campaigns and stopping and frisking people who are walking, mostly poor people and indigenous people, because a lot of our indigenous people, especially in New York, they had that going on for quite some time, without cause for decades. And recently, New York City lost the federal civil rights challenge to their police stop and frisk practices. Civil rights, that's a whole nother ball game I really want to get into, because if you are actually a citizen of this country, why is it that we are the only people that actually need a Voting Rights Act for us to be able to vote? And that gets into a large percentage of our political system and how it was actually set up. But I digress. Rights during police stop over 500,000 people annually without any indication that the people stopped have been involved in any crime at all. About 80% of those stops were of indigenous and indigenous Latinos who compromised 25 to 20% of New York City's total population. The Chicago do the same thing. Chicago police force do the same thing, stopping even more people also in a racially discriminatory way, with 72% of the stops being of indigenous people's background. And even though the city has 32% indigenous people in it. Three, police traffic stops are also racially targeted people in cars. Get this. Indigenous drivers are 31% more likely to be pulled over than our albino or white counterparts. Drivers and Hispanic drivers are 23% more likely. Indigenous Hispanic people are 23% more likely to be pulled over than our albino or white counterparts. Connecticut, in April 2015 report, 620,000 stops, which revealed widespread racial profiling. Particular, and this is how we know, particular during daylight hours when the race of the driver was more visible. Four, once stopped, black or indigenous and Hispanic indigenous motorists are more likely to be given tickets, while albino or white drivers stopped for the same offenses are more likely to get off. Five, one stop, black and Latinos are more likely to be searched, right? And so reports black drivers or indigenous drivers at traffic stops were searched by police three times more often, and Hispanic drivers two times more often than albino or white drivers. I was doing this research. There was a young lady who was changing life over, and she'd given herself over to God, and she was starting these community organizations, and she got stopped. She was putting out these YouTube videos of positivity, and she was stopped by a police officer, and the police officer was very nasty, and she was very polite. And she asked the question, why am I being stopped? And he basically really told her to shut up. And the end result was she was beaten quite severely, pulled out of her car, beaten quite severely. And she was brought to the police station, where she ended up dead. And this goes into, when we talk about training our young children on how to survive in this particular type of environment and this governmental system until we're able to provide something better for them. Traffic tickets are big business, and even most people do not go directly to jail for traffic tickets. Poor people are hit the worst by ticket systems. As we saw with Ferguson, some of the towns in St. Louis, we see 40% more of their city revenues from traffic tickets. Tickets are more money makers for towns. When you talk about St. Louis and Ferguson, over there, there was a great ancient mound builders superplex mall. It was about 5 miles by 5 miles, where the different states and nations and people came and did a lot of trading, and that goes back. And again, a lot of the areas that we live on are populated with the graves and bones of our indigenous ancestors. Seven, the consequences of traffic tickets are much more severe among poor. We went through that one. And so traffic tickets are a big one. Eight, in schools, the indigenous Americans, at this point we call them African Americans, because once we do become indigenous Americans and we start abiding to that, we won't be tolerating a lot of these things that the African Americans were allowing themselves to go through. In school, kids are much more likely to be referred to police than other kids. African or indigenous students are 16% of the enrolled in schools, about 27% of those referred to police. Kids with disabilities are discriminated against at about the same rate, because they are 14% of those enrolled in schools and 26 of those referred to police. So if you, well, again, they claim that you have some sort of a disability. I'm finding that, and I've been in this system for quite some time, because I did child protective services for New York City for over 10 years. I also did foster care for Nassau County, Long Island, with a population of over 3.5 million for about 5 years. And then I also went into daycare licensing for New York State and did that for about 4 years. And then I ran housing authorities. And I did that for about a year or two. And quite some other things. And a lot of the things that I find that when they say that you have some sort of a disability or they want to put you on some meds, it's quite false and fictitious. So we'll get somebody on to discuss those things, and you can have an understanding of what these medications are actually doing to your mind and to your children's mind if you don't really need them. 9, though black people make up 12% of the U.S. population, black children are 28% of the juvenile justice arrest. The Department of Justice reports that there are over 57,000 people under the age of 21 in juvenile detention centers. The U.S. even has 10,000 children in adult jails and prisons on any given day. Isn't our president black? I think he's black. Let me think about that. 10, the war on drugs target indigenous people. Drug arrests are being source of bodies and businesses for the criminal legal system. Half of the arrests these days are for drugs, and half of those are for marijuana. Despite the fact that the black and white population use marijuana at the same rates, the ACLU found black imprisonment is 3.7 times more likely to be arrested for possession of marijuana than their counterparts. The ACLU found that some blacks indigenous melanated people were 6 times more likely to be arrested for marijuana than for albinos or whites. For all drug arrests between 1980 and 2000, the U.S. black drug arrest rate rose dramatically from 6.5%, get this, to a whopping 29.1% per 1,000 people. During the same period, the white drug arrest rate barely increased from 3.5 to 4.6 per 1,000 persons. 11, many people in the prisons, because U.S. has much tougher drug laws and much longer sentences for drug offenses than other countries. There was a lot of drug stuff that's been going on in terms of the justice system. We have on 12, the bail system penalizes more people every day. There are about 500,000 people in jails who are still presumed innocent and waiting for trial because they are too poor to get proper representation. Jails and prisons provide a lot of jobs for local, state, federal officials. How many people do you know that might be in the prison system? So again, we went and we took care of those issues, how it's a business. The people in local jails are there because they are a threat to the rest of us. Nearly 75% of the 100,000s of people in local jails are there for nonviolent offenses. Criminal bonds are a big business also. 60% of people arrested are forced to post financial bonds, at least pending trial, usually by posting cash or house. In the bond industry, which takes about $14 billion every year. Very high percentage of people in local jails provide with diagnosis of mental illness. Lots of people in jail need treatment. Nearly 70% of the people population of prison meet medical criteria for drug abuse and dependence. Yet only 17% ever receive drug assistance. And a lot of people go in there without HIV and come out with HIV, as we all know that as well. Poor people have to rely on public defenders. If anybody had a public defenders, you know how risky that is. When poor people face felony charges, they often find public defenders overworked, underfunded, thus not available to provide adequate help. And I know about that firsthand because I've seen that system working when I was in the Child Protective Services. We're up to 21. Lots of poor people plead guilty. So a lot of people, they just plead guilty. Many are forced to plead guilty. You remember the wilding gang of thing of 8 in Central Park? They all were forcified and framed, and they were all released as innocent people. And almost nobody in prison ever had a trial. So they go in there and they get trapped up again. I think the president of the United States signed some bills stating that they can imprison people for and detain them for as long as they want, as long as they were called terrorists. I think the president did that. Average person sentence is much longer than they used to be, right? So people are staying in jail much longer. There are about 70% chance of that an indigenous American man without a high school diploma will be in prison. So your education can also be a factor. Almost 12 indigenous men ages from 25 to 54 are in jail or prison compared to 1 in 60 non-black men. That's about 600,000 indigenous American men in prison rate, 5 times that of their counterparts. Prison has become a very big business. We went through that as well. Sentencing Project reports that over 159,000 people are serving life sentences in the U.S., so they're getting stuck in there a lot more. And remember, this has gone up almost 400% since 1984. Nearly 250,000 prisoners in the U.S. are over the age of 50.
Wow.
That's crazy. Inside prisons, the poorest are taken advantage of again. Almost such telephone calls, families. So they can't get their proper representation, and they have to pay for their calls as well. 31, the Department of Justice, another 3.9 million people are on probation. And a lot of times when you're on probation, it only takes a little something for you to get you off of that, right? Additional 850,000 people on parole. That's another one. 100 million people have criminal records. That's crazy. Everyone can find out people's records because they have easy access, so people can get arrested a lot more easier. Race is a multiplier, right? Disadvantaged by unemployment, right? Families that are hurt by this, sentencing reports, 800 families of women, lifetime bans, temporary assistance. So you're compelled to go into some sort of criminal activity in order for you to survive. Convicted people cannot get jobs, and then also you have that revolving door. 38, U.S. spends $80 billion on big business and correction facilities. 39, putting more people in jail creates more poverty, which creates a higher percentage of people out there creating crime. And 40, here we are, just making it. Pulling all of these problems together, you can see why. The Center for American Progress writes, concludes, today, a criminal record serves as both a direct cause and consequence of poverty. What does that say about our society? That it uses its jails, prisons as a primary detention facilities for poor, indigenous, and people who have been racially targeted, and the jails them with mental illness and chemically dependent. We, as a people, need to take what I just read to you into deep consideration when you're looking at what's happening to us as a people. We're being systematically exterminated, and we're being systematically taken out of this population, and we're being systematically brought to a situation as to where we're also non-useful. So when I begin to start explaining to you why they created the African American and now why they don't have any more use for us, and why the prognosis of George Washington, they're fighting hard for it to come true, to have us annihilated and completely eradicated off of this land. So pretty much, guys, there you have it. So if you're still calling yourself an African American, you got to say why. And again, those soul ties are hard to break. You know, if you're still following some of these African American ideals, you have to question yourself and really look at yourself really deeply. If you're not trying to find out more about who you are and where you actually come from in this indigenous population on this side of the earth, you have to say why. And that's because of those soul ties that are so hard to break. And I'm feeling it now because there's a lot of people that are having this problem and having some difficulties, but I'm committed 100%. And we're going to make sure that in our generation, what needs to be done is going to be done for our children, so that we can begin to start putting together life and a society that's going to benefit us. Thank you very much. Next week, we're going to talk about DNA, and we're going to have a great time. So have a great time. It was great today. A lot of great information. Thank you so much, Scotty. I appreciate all that you have done today. And for those that can appreciate it, this is Dark Matter, your host.